From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Coming up later this hour, we'll hear from some musicians and others who will be part of the upcoming Winona version of the Midwest Music Fest this weekend. But first, in the age of digital content and online mega retailers, it can be easy to lose track of the few truly local bookstores that still exist. But they're out there, curating amazing collections of both new and previously read materials. Ahead of tomorrow's Indie Bookstore Day, we're talking to three of those local independent booksellers on today's Newsmakers. Eddie Nix is the owner of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua. Eddie, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you.
Also with us is Shannon Doberstein, owner of Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. Shannon, thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us as well, and hopefully she'll be here very shortly, Beth Hartung, owner of Pearl Street Books in La Crosse. I hope Beth just has a long line of customers at her cash register, right? That'd be a good thing. Starting here with Eddie and Shannon, I want to ask you, maybe I'm putting you on the spot a little bit because this is not necessarily about your shop, but Shannon, we'll start with you. What was the first time you ever remember visiting a bookstore? What was that like for you?
The first time I visited a bookstore was actually the one that I currently own when it was with its first owner. I was 8. It was right down the street from where my grandmother worked, and they had air conditioning. So I would go down there and just get lost in the books and appreciate the air conditioning.
So the Paperbacks and Pieces had air conditioning, and your grandparents' place did not.
Well, her place of business did not. Yes.
Okay. Eddie, what about you? What was your first bookstore experience?
I think the one that I remember is out at Walden Books in the Valley View Mall.
Uh-huh.
when I was young. And strangely enough, when all those stores closed, we were able to buy a bunch of the shelving from those stores. I think 3 Walden Books in total. So it's interesting having the shelves of the first store I ever went into.
That's interesting. And book buying just has changed so much over the years. Especially with the internet and not only digital stuff that's available, but all these online booksellers, and everybody assumed that would be the end of bookstores. And somehow local independent bookstores have found a way to survive, many of them having very, very dedicated clientele. Tell me about those bigger national booksellers. They're not as common as they were. Eddie, you were talking about Walden Books over there in the mall. You've got the big Barnes & Noble store is still out there, but nationally Borders, which was a big bookstore, has closed, and a lot of these places are finding it harder to stay open. And yet people seem really committed to their local independent bookstores. What's that connection between bookstore and customer that keeps independent stores going?
I think that it's supporting your local community. And I think the smaller the community, the more able and willing the people are to do that. I found that in Viroqua, we have just an amazing community of people who support pretty much every business in town, and the businesses themselves support the other businesses. So we do things like music shows and things like that. And the Driftless Cafe, for instance, will offer free meals to those musicians coming through town. Now, they don't have to do that, but they do so that people support our bookstore, and you know, it comes back to them in the end.
What about you, Shannon? You talked about the store that you currently own having been open for some 50 years.
Yeah, so I'm a third generation owner. I feel going into an independent bookstore is a different experience than walking through Books A Million or Barnes & Noble or any of the other box store books. Many of those employees, while they might love to read, it's a job. They're just there to, you know, move them along. Those of us at the independent bookstores, we curate the genres and what's on the shelves, and we take pride in what we put out there to sell. And when a customer says, I'm really looking for a book, and then you start picking away at the questions, yeah, you can do that online, but you can't have the conversation and build that community with that person to keep, and then they'll bring a friend and they'll say, hey, they recommended this book, or they'll pass it along. And that's a good feeling.
So what made you, what was your affiliation with Paperbacks and Pieces before you decided to buy it? What made you want to sort of take that on as your own bookstore?
So I've been a customer, like I said, since I was 8 years old, which is a long time ago. And when pandemic hit, that made a lot of people look at themselves and say, am I happy? Am I doing something that I really love? And the store had actually been for sale for about 3 years at that point. So we had a very heart-to-heart question, you know, conversation at home about it. And then we took it to the previous owner, and I mentored with her for quite some time, learning. And, you know, she actually still owns the building I'm in, so she's still invested, and she's still my number one customer. So, yeah, it was just looking at our lives when we had to stay home and say, what do I want to do? What do I really want to be?
So does that mark a career change for you? I mean, were you a business owner prior to that?
I was not. I worked for other companies. My background is actually accounting and business management. So the numbers side is there, but learning the books and promoting the books and working and communicating with authors and community members has been amazing. I love it. I've never worked so hard at a job in my life.
Eddie, what about you? Tell me about the beginnings of Driftless Books and Music.
Well, it was back in about 2004, and I had just moved back from California and had a U-Haul full of books that I had sort of acquired over that part of my life, and realized that the best way to sort of deal with my addiction to books would be to try to start a store. So I looked around and found a warehouse full of books out in Connecticut that they were... some folks were transforming into condominiums, and it had been owned by a book dealer who had died 10 years previous, and these books had basically just sat there. So they were about to throw them out, and someone got the idea that maybe someone would come and buy them from them. So they put it out on eBay, and I just happened to look on eBay for the first time in my life that day, and made a call and drove out to Connecticut and spent the next 3 months packing up really only about 30% of the books in this warehouse, but that ended up being two semi-truck full of used books. And so I brought them back, and, you know, from that point on, there was no looking back.
I'm going to pose this question to each of you, but Eddie, since you just talked a little bit about how you got your first sort of influx of material to sell, how do you curate the different books that end up in your bookshop? Is it, I mean, will you take anything that looks like it's still in pretty good shape, or is there some stuff that you're just not interested in, or how do you make those decisions?
Well, that's kind of the critical question. We have a policy, since we have a massive building, we're in a 120-year-old tobacco warehouse that's about 20,000 square feet. So,
oh my.
We have enough space to sort of say, okay, we'll take anything you want to A, donate, B, bring for store credit, and then depending on the books, we'll purchase books too. So that means every day, literally, that we're open, someone's coming in with a bag, a box, a truck full, and it never ends. So we also have bought out, I think, 6 or 7 different bookstores around the country that have closed, including Larry McMurtry's little book village down in Archer City, Texas, that he ran for a long time. Before he passed away, he had something called the Last Book Sale, and it was a big auction of 6 of his different stores down there. And so I bought another truckload, semi-truck full of books from that. And one in Berkeley and one in New York and a bunch of different places. Plus, there's been different collections of either retired ministers and pastors or retired college professors, which is always sort of the best type of books, because the academic books seem to, you know, keep a little bit of value versus the mass produced sort of Random House type fiction stuff.
So Shannon, what about you curating the collection? What's your approach?
So most of the books that come in our doors are trade credit books from customers, and I mean, the only thing I really turn away would be college textbooks, because they change every 6 months. Every semester it's a different thing, and so I stay away from the textbooks. But we don't turn books, we don't turn any title away based on title or genre. It's not, the previous owner instilled in me that it's not my responsibility to tell you what to read. It's my responsibility to have it all available for you, and then you get to make the choice what you want to, you know, what you want to take home from my shelves.
So to that end, is there anything that that you are making a bigger effort to try to get that doesn't come in the store every day? Or is there a particular thing that you spend time trying to curate, trying to bring in the doors to make sure that you have it for those customers?
It depends on the flow of book sales. I know about 2 months ago, we were hit really hard in the kids section. We were down on board books for littles. We were down on early readers. And I just put a call out on Facebook and I said, hey, bring us your books, earn store credit, and then you can get new books for a reduced cost. And we had 6 boxes come in within 3 days, like big boxes. And it refilled the shelves. It was great. And my customer base online has been really responsive to our needs in the store when I put a call out there that, you know, this section needs love. And then they're cleaning closets, so they bring them in.
Now, I know a lot of people really appreciate independent booksellers for their, you know, a lot of them are known as used bookstores. Not all of them are, but certainly there's a lot of used books. Both of you have talked about people bringing in their previously read materials that you can then sell to other readers. But a lot of stores like yours will have some new inventory as well. So tell me how you strike that balance between being like exclusively a used bookstore versus how much new material to include. Shannon, you want to start with that one?
We keep about 10% of the store as new, whether it's new sidelines or new books, and it's all at the front. So that way there's no confusion when they walk through the store later. A book can be in immaculate condition and still be previously read. A majority of our sales are through the used. You know, the same book will come and go through our system up to 50 times and nobody will bat an eye. They'll just keep taking it out. But then when the new releases come out, it's important to have those available. But it's hard because they come out in hardcover and then they're closer to $30 a piece. So we do offer rentals as well for new releases. So it's easier to stomach not spending $30 on a brand new hardcover that might not hit paperback for 18 months. And then they can just rent it for $5 instead.
So you talked about books and sidelines. What do you mean by sidelines?
So it's important to have sidelines. When you're dabbling in new, it's important to have the sidelines. Those are your bookmarks, journals. We actually sell craft soda in the store as well. I sell book-themed candles, book-themed purses and wallets. Things that are gifty items, because not everybody who walks the door is a book lover. And you might say, hey, let's go to the bookstore, and your friend will groan, but then they'll walk in and see something else that, oh, well, maybe. And then, you know, they'll tell a friend and, you know, networking.
Okay. So those would be the non-book items, but still things that somehow intersect with that area of interest.
Yes.
Okay. Eddie, what about you?
Well, in terms of the new versus used, we're about 95% used. And we only really buy new books when they're local authors. We try to support all the local authors that come in. So if someone comes in with a book that they've published themselves, we'll at least buy a copy or two of it. There's been some recent books that have come out locally that have been, you know, really great sellers in the store. And we do use a site called bookshop.org, which is really an amazing, amazing sort of alternative to the evil Amazon empire. And it allows customers to buy new books online, any book that Ingram, which is the main distributor of new books in the country, anything that they have, you can buy new. It ships directly to you, and we get a really nice, healthy cut of that. So during COVID, for instance, it was a huge thing for us just to keep going when we couldn't have the physical store open. In terms of sidelines, I think Shanna's totally right. We do things like used records, which really have exploded in the last couple of years to the point where we're opening a separate used record store now. And you know, things like old maps or old postcards, ephemera, which could be anything from old advertisements to, you know, ticket stubs, just depending on the customer and what they're looking for.
We're talking to Eddie Nix, who owns Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, also Shannon Doberstein, owner of Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. And this is Newsmakers, of course, from Wisconsin Public Radio. We always want to hear from you. You can email us anytime throughout the week at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse in the Southwestern Bureau of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow is Indie Bookstore Day. So today, of course, we're visiting with some independent booksellers in our area. Joining us, Shannon Doberstein, owner of Paperbacks and Pieces, and Eddie Nix, owner of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua. Eddie, right before the break, you alluded to supporting local authors, and I know both of you do that as an important part of your work. I want to talk about that aspect of running the shop. How do you find the authors in the area in order to know which works to promote or which ones to feature in your store, which ones to maybe host an event, that kind of thing? Eddie, how does that work at Driftless Books and Music?
Well, they find us, basically. You know, since there's not a lot of independent bookstores around, anybody who publishes a book will sort of immediately come down to the shop and say, hey, will you buy a couple? But we do also seek out, you know, sort of the more important local authors, someone like David Rhodes or Michael Perry or, you know, Ben Logan, Sigrid Olson, some of these classic Wisconsin authors that people really want. You know, we'll actually go out and order those books new or used, depending on if the author's alive or dead or it's still in print or not. And those are the books that we have a hard time keeping in stock, like San County Almanac, you know, or the book Driftless by David Rhodes, you know, incredible good sellers, but, you know, hard to come across because they're so good, people want to keep them.
What about you, Shannon? Talk to me about your philosophy as far as who to invite in the store and how many events to offer and that kind of thing.
I'm with Eddie on this. They find us. We had 1 week previously where I had three authors within 2 days come in with their books and trying to have an event and bring them in the house. Our policy is we don't do consignment on the books because we can't guarantee that they're going to move around. We do ask that the author have an event and promote it themselves, tell people to come in, you know, publish it in the local paper online and let them know. And then from there, we make the decision, do we stock the book? Do we not stock the book based on popularity of the event? But we do two author events a month because that way it's not overload on customers feeling like they need to be at the bookstore every weekend. I mean, I want them at the bookstore every weekend.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't want them to feel like the pressure, like, oh, I don't want to miss out on this one. So we limit it to two. I promote them online. I promote them in store. I usually keep a nice little stand right next to me, and I talk about them. I also try to read them. If I have a local author coming in, I try and read their books so that way I can talk about it with people, because then I can say, you know, I didn't like murder mysteries for a long time, but then I read this one, and it was fantastic. So that's my approach to it.
So let's talk about upcoming events. What's on your calendar? I know you've got something going on for Indie Bookstore Day.
Oh my gosh, Independent Bookstore Day is going to be huge at Paperbacks and Pieces. So we have five local authors coming in on this Saturday. So we have Jenny Barsh. She's local in Winona. We also have Heather Edwards coming in with her children's book. Sean Patrick Boyd is coming in. He wrote, it's a graphic novel based in the 80s about Winona. So he's actually flying in from Colorado. We have Bud Hoekstra coming in and N. Daniel as well with two memoirs that they wrote. That's going to be huge. And then the weekend after that, we have David Marshall coming in with a theology book. So we're trying to keep a broad scope of what we offer in store as well for local authors.
So a graphic novel about 80s Winona and theology the next weekend.
Yes.
Interesting mix. There we go. Because you never know what you can find at an independent bookstore, right?
Right, absolutely.
And Eddie, what about you? Upcoming events, including but not limited to Independent Bookstore Week or Day?
Well, we do mainly music events. We do author events also, but we're going to have a lot less than pre-COVID. At one point during, I think it was 2016 or something, we had over 100 music events at the bookstore. And so now we get all these bands that are coming through the area that contact us. And so we've really had to say no to most of them this year. But we are going to have one or two a month. I think we're going to stick to that, kind of what Shannon was saying, not overloading the community.
Yeah.
And a lot of these music events, we're going to try to get out to other venues in town so people can still sort of get the Viroqua charm and come and experience the community. So let's see. Well, there's one tomorrow, but that will be after this is broadcast. That's about it. We are scheduling some local authors that are going to be coming in this summer. That's pretty much mostly the music. We're also opening a second bookstore and expanding the record store in downtown Viroqua, and that's going to happen on June 1st. So there'll be a brand new bookstore, not selling all new books, but mainly focusing on Wisconsin history, metaphysics, political science, and homesteading. So that'll be one way for us to kind of clear some of the stuff that's been clogging up the store, and also allow those people who want to explore those type of areas to have a separate place.
So if people are looking for information on who those musical acts might be coming up, or want to know about that second store when it opens, or the record store as you expand that operation, tell me about where the best place to find information about Driftless is.
Well, we have a website called driftlessbooks.com, and we're sort of updating that this month, so there may be some downtime. But also our Facebook page is pretty much the most up-to-date information.
And Shannon, what about you? Where are people able to find the best information about paperbacks and pieces?
I have a up-and-running website, paperbacksandpieces.com. I update that weekly. I'm also on Facebook under Paperbacks and Pieces, and on Instagram as well.
So I'm wondering, just in terms of the customers who are looking for that individual touch, Shannon, you were talking about it being such a different experience coming into a store versus going to an online retailer or downloading something digitally onto your reader or tablet or whatever. But how many people expect, come through your door and expect you to literally have read every book on your shelf?
Oh, lots of them. Oh my gosh. I had a 13-year-old call me out one day. She brought up three different books and I hadn't read any of them. And she goes, "Well, have you read any books in this store?" I said, yes, I've read lots of books, just not those three.
So talk about how you work with people to help meet their needs as readers when you haven't, and how in the world could you read everything in your inventory?
I ask a lot of questions. I try and narrow down what they enjoy, what they've read in the past. I go off of what other people are reading in that genre. I try and stay away from any online searches if I can, because then because they can do that too. So if I know a customer really enjoys murder mystery, well, but do they like the judicial? Do they like them cozy? And then we just go from there and try something new. And most times it's a success that they're thrilled. They walked out with something, with a new author that they get to try.
Eddie, what about do your customers come in kind of knowing what they want and just point me to the right section, or are they quizzing you about what they might like to try on?
A little bit of both. Since we're kind of a unique store in that we're so big, we have a lot of people coming from the big cities, Minneapolis, Chicago, Madison, and so they're sort of coming for a bit of bookstore tourism. They're looking forward to it. They maybe spend the weekend there in Viroqua, you know, participate in some of the other things happening, like the cafes and such. But most people are pretty self-directed, I've found. But, you know, when you do engage them, and we try to engage every customer who comes in, it's just amazing, you know, basically, or whether it's getting their backstory, you know, how'd you hear about us, or what kind of things do you like to read? You know, it really opens up an amazing sort of repartee back and forth between the customer and the bookseller, which I think is the main reason that bookstores will always be around, because people don't get that on the internet. And, you know, that's impersonal. And you can't find a book that you don't know exists on the internet. It's a lot harder to, rather than, you know, going to a section and seeing all these books, suddenly they're right there in front of you. So there's a lot to be said for the tactile in-house browsing versus the internet.
Tell me about another thing that comes up when people talk about books is collectibles. Do either of your stores get into that, those like collectible type books, or is that something that is just a different area altogether?
We have a small case at Paperbacks and Pieces that's glass case, which means that they're going for over cover price online. And I scan them and check them about once a month just to see how they're moving. And customers know that that's what's in the case. They know that they can't use trade credit on them. And they know that, you know, the prices do fluctuate based on consumer demand. But otherwise, when books come in and they're old and they might be worth something, that's a lot of time and effort to be looking into them and figuring it out. I have a vintage section and I sell them for $2 a piece. And I've had customers come in and say, you know, this is worth X amount of dollars. I mean, not astronomical, but mm-hmm. more than $2. And I say, oh, good. It's still going to be $2 plus sales tax, please. Because just the hassle of trying to move it along somewhere else it's a lot.
Yeah. What about you, Eddie? Collectible material at all?
I'm definitely going to come to Shannon's store. a lot of what we do is I suppose, collectible. We have about 35,000 things that are online, and most of those are, you know, either the first edition type things or the harder to find things. It's just, if you have a book that's a, you know, $100 book, the chances of someone walking into the store in Viroqua and buying it are pretty slim. But you start putting it out there on the internet and you have a really good chance of selling. So, you know, about half of our business is online, even though I've been bashing online bookstores.
I've got a defense for you, Eddie. I think what you've been bashing is the corporate consolidation of the industry, not so much the actual tool of selling things online.
Exactly.
Yep. back to me putting you on the spot. At the beginning, I asked each of you to talk about your first experience in a bookstore. But now I'm interested to know, do you remember the first book you ever bought?
Well, I think it was one of those choose your own adventures, which I was really into as a kid. And strangely enough, those have super crazy value now. Sort of that nostalgia thing with the 80s kids growing up and mm-hmm. wanting to relive their childhood. But and it's interesting to see that that has become its own little genre, where even there's adult books that are sort of in the choose your own adventure category, which is interesting to see.
Yeah, the La Crosse Public Library could not keep enough of those in stock right around 1985 for me. I mean, it was just endless. What about you, Shannon? What's the first book you remember buying?
I remember it was a Barbie holiday chapter book. And actually the store's not around anymore either. It's sad. But I think I still have the book in a tote. I'm a book hoarder. Yeah.
If you're a book hoarder, you're in the wrong business. You're going to want to keep everything.
No, I've been doing really well with like reading them, loving them, and then letting somebody else love them.
That's perfect. Well, I certainly want to thank you both very much for joining us. Eddie Nix is the owner of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua. Eddie, thanks a lot for being here on Newsmakers.
Thank you very much, Ezra.
And Shannon Doberstein is the owner of Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. Shannon, thanks a lot for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out.
And unable to join us today, but I want to throw out a shout out for her wonderful store is Beth Hartung, who owns Pearl Street Books in La Crosse. If you're not sure where it is, it's on Pearl Street downtown. It's in the old Aaron's Shoes building. and the thing looks like it was built to be a bookstore. So go check them out for sure. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Remember, you can hear this conversation again or stream any of our previous episodes on demand. Just go to WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Or find Newsmakers in your favorite podcasting app. Coming up, we'll hear from some musicians and others who are associated with the Midwest Music Fest, and that's going on this weekend in Winona. We're back in just a minute. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studios. If you're hearing music in the air lately, it may not be just the birds returning from their winter respite. It could actually be the musicians tuning up for the upcoming Winona version of the Midwest Music Festival. The semi-annual festival hosts offerings each year in La Crosse and Winona, and this weekend is the Winona rendition. Joining us to talk about that is the executive director of Midwest Music Festival, Dylan Hilliker. Dylan, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us today, a couple of musicians. First off, Luke Callen. Luke, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got Siri Undlin, who is the singer and songwriter behind the band Humbird. Siri, thank you a lot for being on Newsmakers this week.
Yeah, excited to be here.
So we're talking about Midwest Music Festival. And Dylan, I know you are new to the festival, and this is your first year as executive director and about to kick off the big music weekend. So tell us a little bit about what's in store.
Excited to be back in Winona again, bringing it back to kind of the full scale event that we're used to. We'll have over 70 bands on 8 stages throughout 7 venues over the course of the weekend, April 29th and 30th. There's a lot of details, so go to MidwestMusicFest.org to find out all that you need to know.
You're not going to list all 70 bands, and thank you for that, because that gets to be...
I could.
I'm sure you could rattle it off pretty quickly at this point. But when you look at the mix of entertainers that come and go from a festival like this, how do you achieve, like, everybody likes to see, good, like a local artist made good kind of thing on the big stage. And also everybody wants to see, you know, somebody who's getting some regional or national attention come and perform as well. So how do you make that balance between good, well-known local acts and also like more prominent regional national bands and artists?
Midwest Music Fest is great because it's a music discovery festival. It's not just a music festival. It's where you can find your next favorite band, you know. So I think we try to take that into account and try to book things that are multi-genre and have, you know, staying power in a bunch of communities in the Midwest, you know. So we look a lot, we get, you know, tons and tons of artist submissions from all over the Midwest. So we try to take a good mix of locals and also be thinking about taking a look at kind of what is on the up and coming from the national and the regional realm. So, you know, trying to kind of, bridge the gap between that is great. But I think it's great because we are in a unique position to kind of, be the rising tide that lifts all boats, you know, so to speak. We can book the big national talent, but also, you know, book the small Winona local band that could turn into, you know, the next big thing, like a Karate Chop, Silence, or Sleeping Jesus, or, you know, some of the bands that came before and now are doing big things.
Speaking of doing big things, Siri Undlin is with us with Humbird. And Siri, as you're here and looking at, as Dylan said, the full force Midwest Music Festival, not some kind of hybrid thing and not some kind of one or two bands, you know, distanced by 47 miles kind of thing. What's it like now getting back into this festival environment and performing for these crowds as this concert season kind of kicks off?
It's really exciting. I mean, it's been a while since these big gatherings were possible and felt safe. So I think a lot of musicians and a lot of music lovers are really excited to get back outdoors and like celebrate what we all love together. I think Midwest Music Fest in particular is exciting because you get to see a lot of your friends who are musicians and maybe tour a lot, and you don't get to be in the same place very often, but it's kind of everyone comes home and we can celebrate what we have going on in this part of the country, which I think is really awesome and should be lifted up whenever possible.
Now, you're based in Minneapolis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. How many times have you played at Midwest Music Fest?
I think it's like 3 or 4 years now.
Okay. It's in the very name, Midwest Music Fest. Like what's different about playing a festival in this region or kind of in your home region versus something that might be farther afield?
Well, I definitely love seeing a festival lineup and recognizing almost every band on it and seeing how friends and community members are just making great music and performing it out in the world. I think when you play festivals farther away, it's almost like going to a lunchroom in school where you don't know anyone. It's like, oh, I hope people are nice. I hope there's kind people. But when it comes to Midwest Music Fest, it's like, oh, I'm going to have a packed day trying to catch all the music that I know is awesome.
Luke Callen is with us here on Newsmakers today. Luke is going to be playing at the festival as well. Tell me about how the last couple of years have been for you as a musician. Have you found motivation in coming out of that, or is it like, I'm glad to be back to work, or has that been like an incredibly creative period for you? Talk about it.
Yeah, it was, the last couple of years have been really, really hard. I don't think that it was a particularly creative time for myself. I actually live in South Minneapolis. I'm from La Crosse, Wisconsin, and I've spent, a chunk of time there in my adulthood. But so, yeah, I actually put down music for almost a year and kind of spent a lot of time as a community member in South Minneapolis. And yeah, it's been really healing to get back to music the last year. I think that there had been a well of emotions and feelings and ideas getting filled throughout that time period, and more recently has felt good creating again.
You talked about setting down music for about a year. Yeah. Was there a point where you thought you might not pick it back up?
No.
It was just sort of shutdown related. There's nowhere to play, so I'm just gonna chill for a little while.
It was more like the National Guard flying helicopters above my house for a couple months, and the National Guard occupying my street for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And the brutality of the Minneapolis Police Department, mm-hmm. that kind of made it really difficult to feel inspired to write anything that I felt was worth saying. And the months following that, it was a time for me to listen as actively as I could and engage in community building in ways that I was able to. So that was more the case for why I wasn't playing music. I didn't have any intention of stopping, but I knew that I needed some time to listen for a while.
You're referencing the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd everything that came after that. Now that you are kind of back at it, I mean, how as an artist, like how do you take that which happened like right in your backyard? I mean, this huge, huge national story, and kind of move forward with it in a way that's productive.
I don't know. Still trying to figure that out.
Figuring it out, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that I questioned a lot of what music meant and what purpose music had. And I'm still navigating that question, I would say. But I do, getting back to playing music and performing in community oriented settings, I see that the healing power of music and the the qualities of community that it can kind of encapsulate. So things like, I feel like where I'm going off on this tangent that's occupied my mind, things like Midwest Music Fest, community events like that are really important for, I think, for healing in general, for discussion, for going forward. I don't know if it's the answer or a answer or I have any answers, but it's good to see things happening again and being a part of them. Yeah.
Siri, what about you? All these different things that have happened over the last couple of years, how have you worked through it from a creative point of view?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what Luke said resonated a lot. It's hard to motivate or really want to pick up a guitar when there's so many desperate crises unfolding around you. And similarly, I didn't pick up a guitar or write a song for a couple months after George Floyd was killed. And I didn't set music down for a whole year. I would say in the fall of 2020 was when I kind of picked up the guitar again and started trying to write songs that felt like safe spaces sonically to process and to heal and to hold space and also to mark that time. And like Luke was saying, it is when you're ready to process as an artist, your craft can be like a map or a compass back to yourself and also to new terrain that you have to figure out a way to embody and metabolize and move forward with. And ideally, if you do a good job, you'll provide that for other people too. Hard to say while you're in the middle of it, but yeah, I think those really tragic events that unfold on a small scale or an international scale can really rattle you and rattle your perspective on what you're doing and how you're moving through the world. But those reality checks are also super important. You have to be kind of constantly asking yourself, why am I doing this? Who does it impact? And what does what I have to say like matter? And like, they're not like really very fun questions, but maybe like the most important ones to keep at the forefront as you make things and move through the world.
I'm going to circle back to the Midwest Music Fest and get the particulars about that in a little bit. But I want to ask each of you, for people who are listening to you, reflect on your own music making process and are interested in you as individual artists. Where can people find your work? Siri, we'll start with you. Where can people find your work or social media presence or website or something like that?
Humber Music is on all streaming platforms, and it's also on Bandcamp. There's physical merchandise if people want to buy it there. Humbirdmusic.com is sort of a meeting ground of all of those places. And if people, you know, really want to support the music, Patreon is a great platform to support lots of artists and lots of different genres. And that's also a hub of Humbird music and writing and stuff.
And what about you, Luke?
Yeah, I always encourage people to go check out my website, lukecallen.com. That's all the updated tour dates, and that's where I really like to see folks and meet folks is out at shows. It's really important community gathering spaces, local music venues, and the whatnot. I'm also on all the streaming platforms, however you take in your music. And also have like the social media stuff. That's where you can find my stuff.
Dylan Hilliker is here, who's the executive director of the Midwest Music Fest. Dylan, you've got, as you mentioned before, 70-something artists all over a bunch of different venues and all kinds of activity going on. It starts as we're recording a little bit ahead of time, but as this is airing, it starts Friday night and goes through Friday night, Saturday. Tell me where people can find information about who's playing where and how they can get involved.
MidwestMusicFest.org is our main ground, so you can find day schedules, lineups, everything you need to know about the fest there. You can also download the Midwest Music Fest app this year. So iOS or Android gives you a nice little layout of the schedule, the map, where you need to go, And you can even, you know, tap on artists, create your own schedule, and get push notifications for when those artists are coming on. And then on social medias, we're at MWM Fest. Yeah, MWM Fest on all social medias.
That's cool. People can download the app and create their own schedule. That's pretty fun. I've never used a function like that before, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Since we have Siri here and since we have Luke here, I'm going to ask you when Humbert is playing and when Luke is playing.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So they're both playing at Eagles Club.
Not sure if I know who they're playing.
That's why I didn't ask you.
Well, I know Siri's set because Siri ends the festival for us. Siri is 11:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. on Saturday night at the Eagles Club. Then Luke is also at the Eagles Club at a date and time that I do not know.
Actually, Eagles Club on Saturday, like two performances before Humbert.
Yeah.
Like 8:30 or 9:30.
Okay.
I will go next week.
It'll be one of those times, and if you download the app, you'll be able to set up your own schedule. Make sure that you catch both of those performances.
It's 8:30. I have my schedule up on my computer right now.
Nice.
Okay. Good deal. So what kind of mix of musical styles or genres or whatever are going to be available for people?
Yeah, man. I mean, it kind of runs the gauntlet. We have kind of curated the stages based on what people are looking to see. Siri and Luke both kind of run in the Americana and folk realm, and that's typically Eagles Club where most of that stuff's going to be happening. But some of the other venues like No Name is pretty famous for being a punk and loud music venue, so they'll have some of that stuff there. Island City has some more kind of jam bandy, big band with horns kind of sections. Blooming Grounds and Acoustic Cafe are going to be kind of the laid back, like singer-songwriter vibes. Levy Park is going to be our headliners and are kind of curated based on that night's headliner. And then Peter's Beer Garden, which is a new stage for the festival this year, is going to be kind of like what we're calling the discovery stage, like kind of, you know, a mishmash, a smorgasbord of whatever, you know, we had to offer. So you'll see like Beastie Boys style rap, post-punk, psychedelic rock, kind of all over the place, runs the gamut.
I don't want to diminish the work or impression of any of the artists who will be appearing, but since you mentioned headliners, who are some folks to look out for that you know, names people might recognize or the ones you might expect to draw a crowd?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Siri and Humbert obviously, and Luke will obviously draw a crowd. You know, they're Winona favorites. The two headliners for the festival this year are Polisa, which is a kind of Minneapolis mainstay electropop act that's been around for a long while now. And they're, you know, Minneapolis royalty, so it's nice that we have them down there. And then the Friday night headliner is Haley, who was formerly known as Haley Bonner, who actually played the fest way back in 2012. So 10 years off and now she's back. So we're excited to have that as well. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of names that stand out to me. I mean, I've been telling everyone to go check out Papa Mbe. He's a visual artist, kind of like a rap indie rock mix from Minneapolis that I cannot see not blowing up at this point. He's just a really talented dude. Yeah, man. I mean, there's just like so many things. I mean, I think I would encourage people to download the app and or go to the website and check out the bands and just kind of read their bios, see the pictures, see what they want to see, you know.
So before we go, quick, what's the website one more time?
Yeah, MidwestMusicFest.org.
That's Dylan Hilliker, the executive director of Midwest Music Fest. Dylan, thanks a lot for being on Newsmakers today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Siri Unlin is with Humbert. Siri, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
We also appreciate Luke Callen, who's been talking to us. Luke, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you so much.
And the Midwest Music Festival is, as you're listening to this, it is this evening and tomorrow. in Winona, and I'm sure we'll talk about the La Crosse version later on down the road because it's in a few months. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's how you can listen to our program every week. We're on Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9, and of course always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. For Dawn Jewell, our producer, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Someday we will go back to work. Someday we will go back to work. May we be among people who respect our work. Someday we